go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John, engineering on the other side of the glass, the Buckmaster Show for Monday. It is Halloween, the final day of October. Always is Halloween. Not a huge fan of Halloween. I think I enjoyed it. I know I did as a kid, getting all the candy and stuff. But as an adult, not really into it. John Munger's with me here, and John's... you got a Halloween party tonight, and you're going to go
As a cowboy. Which I have anyway. I just put my boots and spurs on. And
that won't be a difficult costume to come up with. It's Buckmaster broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by our friends over at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Sponsors our Monday political face-off. Moe, it's a family-run organization. They've done just a great job since they opened their doors back in 1985. Moe and the beautiful framing they do, but there's more than just the framing. They have the custom frame mirrors. We've got a couple of them in our home. Really nice stuff. They've got some beautiful art in the gallery, so check it out. And then e-commerce. They've got a really nice website, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lill and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. John Munger is here, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, and Republican candidate for governor in 2010, former chair of the Republican Party, also in Arizona. Jeff Rogers with us on our live line, also a well-known Tucson attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Jeff, I was so sorry to hear that you have the flu, but I'm not really surprised. A lot of cold and flu, and there's some COVID out there. A lot of stuff going on. How are you feeling, my friend?
Well, I'm feeling quite a bit better today, but don't procrastinate. Get that flu shot. I saw an article yesterday where experts were telling us that the flu is not only going to hit harder this year, I mean, in that it's worse, and this is the worst flu I've ever had, but that it's also hitting a little sooner. Instead of peaking in January or February and starting to hit in November, it's actually hit in October. And so I was going to get a flu shot this weekend, but as it turns out, I got the flu before I could get the flu shot. So don't procrastinate out there. Get your flu shot, especially if you're in an older age group like we are. It'll hit you hard.
Hey, Jeff, it's John. I hope you feel better, my friend.
Thanks. I'm quite a bit better today than I was the last few days.
Good.
Well, the flu beat you to the old bug beat you to the flu shot. So now you've had the flu and it's never any fun. John and Jeff, so many people have already voted, majority of the people really, because by election day, John won. It's only about 10% people voting on election day. And so I'd say the majority of the people have probably already voted.
I don't know. Well, a lot of people 90% have voted already.
Well, not 90%. Let's say probably
I would
a majority.
Say maybe 50%.
Maybe 50%. But a lot of people have voted. Jeff, what's your sense on this election? Just a week or so ago, it looked like the Senator Kelly looked safe in the polling. But now that has actually eroded a bit, hasn't it, Jeff?
Well, sort of a little. There was a poll that was put out this morning by the New York Times and Siena University that showed Kelly up 51-45 over Masters, and his favorability rating was 47, and Masters is only 38. So, of the four big races here in Arizona, that one I still feel that Kelly's going to win, and he may even win by a wider margin than that poll shows. But the other three are really concerning for both the future of Arizona and the future of our democracy. But, I think Kelly's going to be okay.
John, the race for governor of Arizona, The polling shows that Carrie Lake, the Republican, now has that lead. And we were talking briefly before the show, and I think I've aired this view with you guys before, that if I had been consulting Ms. Hobbs, Katie Hobbs, I would have said, do at least one debate.
Oh, yeah.
Do two. You can't. Do three.
Yeah, you can't. I think that by refusing to debate and hiding, Katie Hobbs has lost herself several percentage points in the vote. She's hiding. She's not a great candidate, evidently. And Carrie Lake has surprised me how well she's composed herself and taken on the race. And she's doing a great job, great campaign, and she speaks well. I've liked most of the things she's doing. So I think Carrie Lake is going to win. Don't know about Blake Masters, but I think the Republicans are going to end up Herschel Walker's ahead in the polls. Now, he's going to have to go through another round because you have to get 51% in Georgia, and there's a third-party candidate. But he's ahead in the polls, so he'll probably win that second round of voting, I think. And I think Laxalt's going to win.
In Nevada.
And I wouldn't be surprised, and those are both turnaround seats. And I wouldn't be surprised if Oz pulls it out in Pennsylvania. But I think the Republicans are going to come out with 51, maybe 52 seats in the Senate. We're going to win about 25 seats in the House. And that's going to be great for the country because we're going to be able to raise some issues, pass some bills and put them in front of Biden to sign that bills that will be good, get our oil and gas flowing again, see what he does with that, try to get the border closed, see what he does with that.
Okay,
Biden's going to be in a bind.
All right, Jeff, is that a pretty optimistic outlook, John's outlook on the House? I think you said 25 seats, Jeff?
I think up around 25.
Okay, what about that, Jeff?
I don't think they'll get that many. I think it'll be 20 or less. And I do think that's an uphill battle for us in the House. But in Georgia, that same New York Times Siena College poll released early this morning showed Warnock up by 49-46 over Walker. I think Warnock's going to win that, but he may not hit 50%. And as John said, that's required there. So you're going to probably see a runoff like we saw 2 years ago. And if that is a runoff like it was last time to decide the Senate for fate, that's going to be quite the circus, I can imagine, from all aspects. But as to Carrie Lake, I agree that Hobbs should have debated her. It would have been a circus because, Carrie Lake is probably the most dangerous lunatic candidate we've ever seen in Arizona's history running for governor. And I would even say she's crazier than Ev Meekum. But she's very polished. She's extremely polished because she has 3 decades of media experience. And that and it makes her somewhat charismatic. And just like Donald Trump, she's a dangerous, charismatic person. We saw the havoc he wreaked for 4 years on America. And she could do the same for Arizona for 4 years. And I'm utterly terrified of her. I don't know who could do more damage to Arizona, her or Fincham. I'm hopeful that at least the voters will, be sensible enough to reject Fincham and Hamada, who's clearly unqualified to do the job. So we've got some, we're leading the nation in dangerous lunatic candidates, and that's not exactly a great proposition for Arizona.
Jeff, it's really interesting to me that every time the Republicans run a candidate, Jeff claims they're radicals, we're dangerous to democracy, and yet the people elect them and vote for them in droves by the millions. In the case of Donald Trump, 74 million people. Now, he lost, But 74 million people voted for Donald Trump. His policies were great policies. He is divisive. But I'm a policy guy, as you know, and I'm not worried about the personalities. The Democrats get their panties all in a bunch because he would put out mean tweets. Well, I'd rather have a few mean tweets than the chaos that we've got in this country right now. And this country is in terrible chaos. There's a malaise out there. Our borders are in chaos. Our economy's in chaos. You know, the crime on the streets are in chaos. And Biden and the Democrats can't and won't do anything about it. I'd rather get back to the policies that work. Now, as I've told you, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump in a primary. I'm going to vote for Nikki Haley or DeSantis, probably. But the policy, only because of his policies.
Okay. Jeff, hang on. We're going to take a break right here, and we'll get your point of view. Do you see the same vision for America as John? I have a feeling you don't see the same chaos that John sees. But anyway, and I will say, Evan Meekum, Governor Meekum, was my first interview the first week on the job when I came to Tucson in 1988 and was over at Channel 6. I think it might have been my first day, actually. The governor walks in, and he wasn't real polished. I'll put it like that.
He was not a polished guy.
No, he was not a polished guy. But anyway, we'll take a break right here and talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. John, could you go for something for Mona's right now?
Oh, I could. I am so hungry. I could go for Mona's. I go up to Mona's about every other week, and I love it up at Mona's. I took my whole family up to Mona's a week ago.
And everybody dug into the pastries.
They love it. They love it. They see that pastry case. And the meals are great meals.
They do.
It's not
do
just pastries.
No, I agree.
The meals are great meals.
They are. The breakfast is really good. And Jeff.
And the lunch is good.
Jeff goes up there for breakfast well. And I've had lunch there. And I love the tuna melt. It's not on the menu, but they will do it for me. And it's real. So there's a little secret menu item. But if you want a tuna melt, it's really good. Okay, they do close on Monday. They deserve a day off, and this is the day off. But they'll open tomorrow, 6:30, for breakfast. And their location, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. And their website is monasdanishbakery.com. We'll be back with John and Jeff right after this.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. We've got John Munger with me in studio and Jeff Rogers, who is ailing from the flu but saying he's getting better. We hope so. Jeff, what do you think? John painted a really bleak picture of the way he sees America right now. What do you think?
Well, let's first look at the border. Border apprehensions are at record levels. And so, while it's a dangerous problem at the border, we're doing our job. Frankly, the biggest problem we've got with apprehensions at the border is lack of Border Patrol. We need more officers. And the vacancies are phenomenal. And we just need more manpower on that border right now. And contrary to what Republicans tell you, the fentanyl is all coming through actual border checkpoints and being smuggled in by people. So that problem is a different kind of problem, but it is definitely a problem. This violent crime that everyone's complaining about, frankly, crime overall has gone down for almost 30 years straight. Now, in the past 3 years, we've seen a slight uptick in some violent crimes, including murder. But what statistics are now showing us is that we don't really understand why that is. But one of the things we do know for sure is that red states have higher crime rates than blue states. Not an accident. I mean, they're run by Republicans. So there you go. So the other thing that I think is really depressing for me is the amount of animosity that we see between the parties, but particularly the violence that's being fomented by Republicans. I mean, you look at what happened to Paul Pelosi the other day. And sure, the Republicans are out there saying, well, that's absolutely wrong. That should never happen. But what they're not doing is they're not condemning the instigation of that violence by Republicans, just like they have ceased condemning what happened on January the 6th. And so, you know, I'm utterly and completely terrified of the landscape we're going to see after the election, because, you know, Democrats are going to win in many places, even if they don't control the House and the Senate. They're going to win races, and we're going to probably see election-oriented violence coming from right-wing people, and that's unacceptable. And I don't see Republicans standing up and saying clearly that this is unacceptable, shouldn't happen, and you know, we need to have a more civilized nation. And in fact, I see mostly Republicans, particularly Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and others, who are fomenting this kind of violence. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's true.
Well, let me respond to that. The violence, Jeff, you're just spinning. Your argument that there's more crime in red states versus New York City, Illinois, and Chicago, Baltimore, New Orleans, which is the crime capital of the country, you know, Los Angeles, San Francisco, everybody watches TV or listens to the radio, reads the newspapers. We know that there's crime, more crime in those areas. And, you know, you can't spin your way out of that. That's just gaslighting. Excuse me, but it is. We know that the crime is rampant. People being thrown off the platforms in New York City into the subway. You know, Paul Pelosi, look, everybody knows the guy that did that is a wacko. It wasn't politically oriented. The guy is just, everybody says he's nuts.
You mean like the thousands of people that raided the Capitol asking, where's Nancy, where's Nancy? That's the same thing he did.
Yeah, well, how about the wacko Democrat that went out and shot Steve Scalise in the Republican Democrat baseball game? How about the Democrats that invaded Lee Zeldin's home in New York? How about the Democrats and wackos that have been threatening our Supreme Court justices?
Okay,
so that's just an argument. Now, you didn't talk about the economy. Now, the economy is shot, all because we've got gas prices out of control, and that's driving everything else. And you like to say, well, the rest of the world's having a bad economy too. Yeah, but the rest of the world doesn't have the oil and gas we have. And you talk about the border. You're telling me we don't have enough border agents. Our border agents are not able to act as border agents because they're busy taking care and babysitting these people that are coming across the border. If we would just enforce the law, we had the border under control by the time Trump left office and Biden changed all those policies, reversed them completely. And you listen to the Border Patrol. They will tell you, the Border Patrol, the experts, will tell you what the problem is. And the problem is we've got open borders in this country. And it's just one thing after another. And you can't gaslight the public forever. That's why the Democrats are going to lose this election in a landslide.
Okay, now, Jeff, it's your turn.
Well, you know, the fact is that we do lack Border Patrol agents at the border, and that's the main problem. And the fact is that the last year of the Trump administration had a much higher incidence of border crossings than did the previous 3 years of his administration. And the other fact is that some of these crazy stunts like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott of Texas and Florida have done are encouraging people to come across the border. They've seen an influx that Border Patrol attributes to the fact that rumors are going around in Central and South America and Mexico that if you can get into the United States, they'll fly you to New York City or Martha's Vineyard or wherever. And these stunts have backfired on DeSantis and Abbott, and will continue to do so. And as to the economy, I don't think our economy is bad. Inflation is a really big problem right now, but that's the biggest problem we've got. We've got unemployment at a historic low for over 50, 60 years even. The economy is booming. It's growing at a rate. I think on Friday it was something like 3% growth rate for the last quarter. So we've got a problem with inflation. We don't have any other problems with this economy. This economy, in many respects, is is hot as hell, and that's part of the problem with inflation, is that the economy is running on hot. So I would completely disagree with
labor participation rate, people participating, working age people participating in working is at an all-time low. It's because we've been we've been paying people not to work in the 24 to 54 year age working group. Something like 20% of working age males are not working, and they aren't so they aren't even looking for a job. So you got a problem, Jeff, and you can't spin it all the time. You can't spin your way out of this. That's why the Democrats are going to lose this election. You can't fool the American public. They're smart.
Okay, Jeff, we hope you feel better. You said you're feeling a little better. You're pumping the liquids.
If you guys haven't got your flu shots, get them now.
I've had mine. I got mine. Got mine.
All right.
All right, Jeff, thanks. Hang in there. Hope you feel better.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. All right. And John, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. And now doing business at moesgallery.com, presenting our Monday Political Face-Off. Be right back after CBS News and the Buckmaster Show. Great sponsor lineup.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. This portion of our program Well, presented by Green Things, 3384 East River Road. They had a very successful parking lot sale, and at last word, I think it might still be going on. Anyway, it's 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site filled with, like the name says, green things. And they also have some beautiful things from imported merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. You can tour the five shots at Green Things, five shops at Zocalo Village. ZocaloVillage.com is their website. The Green Things website is GreenThingsAZ.com. And Green Things has been around, as we say, they just didn't get off the bus yesterday. They've been around for over 50 years. Green Things, open daily, and they have just so many beautiful things. And that parking lot sale was so successful. And I think they may be carrying it on a little bit longer. And we are happy that they are, because it's been a very successful venture. Support also comes from our friends at Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. This is a great time of year to start planning a visit to Silver City, because the temperatures over in Silver City, I don't know, about 60 degrees, and that's perfect time of year to go do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more information about Green Things and about southwestnewmexico.org, Silver City, and Grant County, go to southwestnewmexico.org. And by the way, at buckmastershow.com, there's a roster of all of our great sponsors with links to their websites. All right, now let's welcome Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, our Buckmaster contributor on agriculture, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served on the University of Arizona faculty and worked statewide since 1987. Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, how are you? Always a pleasure to see you.
Likewise. I'm doing fine, Bill. Thank you.
Were you into Halloween? I know probably the only time in my life I was into Halloween was as a kid, hoping for a bunch of candy. But, you know, as you get an adult, and not a big deal.
You know, I love Halloween.
You
always
do.
I love the fall. Uh-huh. Always have. Plus, in our family, an additional, you know, benefit to that is my daughter's birthday is Halloween. So she's had and always celebrated her birthday here on Halloween, and we really enjoy that and celebrate that with her in the family. She has also had a little boy herself a couple weeks ago, and so she has two of them out in her family with October birthdays. So it's a big time. It's a nice time of year.
Yeah, and you and I share the same birth date,
right?
Different years, but
right,
we do share the same birth date. And I, like you, love the autumn.
I do too.
I think October might be my very favorite month, because growing up on the North Shore of Chicago, October was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, when the leaves fall, and then, it doesn't look so beautiful when the trees are all kind of bare and, you know, they've lost their leaves, and then the really cold weather begins. What's going on, Jeff Silvertooth, with the situation? The news has been all over this lettuce shortage.
Right.
Is it that serious, and is it affecting prices?
Well, it is. It's real. And what it is, it's a gap between the production seasons that take place that provide our summer supply of leafy green vegetables, mostly coming out of the Salinas Valley of California. And this time of year, there's a transition. As the Salinas production goes down, as their weather cools and they go into a fall and winter, they lose that summer production from the leafy green vegetables in Salinas. There's a transition valley called the Huron Valley that's part of the San Joaquin Valley in California, kind of an interim step. The next step is as the production harvesting begins in the Yuma Valley. in the lower Colorado River Valley, when that's our winter supply of leafy green vegetables. So it's the same industry that transitions from the Salinas Valley over to the Yuma area, the lower Colorado River Valley, mainly the Yuma Valleys and Imperial Valley, California.
I never heard, by the way, of the Huron, H-U-R-O-N, Huron Valley?
Yes, sir. Right, huh. Right. It's a small pocket up in the San Joaquin, the west side of the San Joaquin, as I recall.
Huh.
But it is kind of an interim step.
Yeah. So and labor moves with this?
Yes, sir.
In the
labor,
change of
the whole
season?
Industry. They pick up coolers and the shipping industry transitions from the Salinas Valley down to Yuma, lower Colorado River. We've been planting vegetables. The growers have been planting vegetable crops down there since mid-late August. And so that early harvest begins about right now in the next week or two. So with this shortage that you're describing that people have been experiencing is a function of that interim where the production goes down out of the Salinas Valley as before it can pick up in the Yuma Valley. But it's also a harbinger for us to be reminded of the critical nature of the leafy green vegetable production systems in the United States and where we receive, not just in Arizona, but most of the United States, we gather and benefit from that leafy green vegetable production in the lower Colorado River Valley from about now, end of October, 1st of November, until mid to late March every year. And that's facing some high degree of jeopardy associated with this Colorado River water shortage because that's where the water comes from to produce that lettuce. All those leafy green vegetables, the broccoli, cauliflower, all the lettuces, iceberg, romaine, baby, leaf, it's spinach, et cetera, all is coming out of that area.
And growing conditions are changing with the climate. It's really crazy what's going on with the climate change. We were up in Alberta, Canada, in early October, Jeff, and the temperatures were typical more of late August, early September.
Right.
And the people up there were saying that it's the climate has definitely changed.
Right. And we see that it translates in agricultural systems to changing what we call our windows of production, particularly out here in the desert. Well, really anywhere, but certainly in the desert. And so what that means, too, is it means that, you know, usually it can be a little inconsistent because you would think, well, if the climate is changing consistently for Salinas, it would extend their growing season later, and ours would pick up and start a little later and extend later here as well into the spring because of warmer conditions, right? But sometimes because of these irregularities, you have the Salinas Valleys, the production is curtailing, yet we can begin and pick up, and we have crops ready to go for harvest here right away. But what we see for us in agriculture is a shifting of these windows of production. It definitely is happening, and you can see from the Arizona Meteorological Network, which Paul Brown began with the U of A 35 years ago. We have 35 years of solid meteorological data, weather data from about 30 locations across Arizona, and you can really see the shift in the past 30 years from that solid data sets all across these sites in Arizona over the past 30 years.
Yeah, and they were also saying up in Canada, the fires that have been happening on a consistent basis late August into September and into October, the fire season never used to last into October up in British Columbia and Alberta. It did this year, and they said it's been doing it now year after year for 10 years.
Right.
There's
a
change, Jeff, that some people still will not accept.
Well, it's changing. I mean, that's pretty clear. The question that people would like to argue, based usually on kind of political lines of division, are the causes associated with it. Either it's anthropogenic or one argument is, no, this is just natural, it's happening. Well, bottom line is, I mean, by God, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is really something we have to get a grip on if we're going to deal with it. And the Colorado River, the Western water shortages are classic examples of that, and it extends into these climatic impacts with forest conditions and enhanced capacity for forest fires in the Northwest, all through the West, as you describe.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we take the break here, because I do want to transition into the latest on the water situation on the Colorado River. It is the Buckmaster Show, Monday edition, the final day of October, October 31st. Be back with Jeff Silvertooth right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Jeff Silvertooth is with us for his monthly visit, UA agronomist. And Jeff, so well-versed on the latest on our water situation. My friend Tim Steller at the Arizona Daily Star had a column in the Star recently about ag is just not doing enough, in Tim's opinion, on this water shortage. I venture to guess you take issue with Tim.
Well, he's right in some respects that ag has to be part of the solution.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Just
to remind our listeners that if the water in Arizona, agriculture utilizes, or we say water is diverted to agriculture at the tune of about 68% or 70%.
That's huge.
It's huge. So agriculture takes a lot of water and requires that water to produce our food and fiber, particularly in a desert production system. Colorado River water, all up and down the whole basin, it's about 65% goes to agriculture. And so you look in the lower basin and it's again about 70%. So what he's saying there is correct, is agriculture has to be part of the solution. However, I would like to remind my colleague Mr. Steller, that agriculture is the only entity that stepped up after the mid-June declaration from the Commissioner of Reclamation, Bureau of Reclamation, Camille Totten, when she said, well, we need 2 to 4 million acre feet reduced out of the Colorado River budget. We need it now. We're going to act on this unilaterally as a bureau and as the Department of Interior, and we're given the basin states 60 days to figure it out. And in that interim 60 days, which, you know, you think about it, for any of us putting together a plan, but a plan of that magnitude.
In two months?
2 months. Agriculture is the only entity that stepped up. They've formed a coalition of the ag interests in the lower basin, that'd be Arizona and the California valleys, which that's tough to do. They're not always, you know, the folks that want to get in a room and start, you know, giving up water. They made a deal. They made an agreement. They made an agreement to come forward with almost 1 million acre feet of water.
Wow.
They were going to be ready to give it. They were ready to put that. They put that on the table.
I wonder why ag did that.
Well, ag did it for the very reasons Mr. Steller is describing, saying we know in agriculture we have to be part of this solution, so we'd rather be, you know, formulating that solution, that component of the solution ourselves. Hmm. And we think, you know, agriculture knows best where and how to do that, and we're realizing we have to contribute. Arizona and in Arizona ag, I have to say, Arizona right now is stepping up more than any other basin state. Agriculture along the lower basin, California and Arizona agriculture, they've stepped up and offered almost 1 million acre feet of water. And what they did offer, too, they said we need compensation per acre from the federal government to help us for the next several years in this transition. Because that basically is a devastating impact on these communities, and it's going to hit things like lettuce prices we were talking about.
Are they going to get that compensation?
Well, the government, no one responded to them. And so when it came around in 60 days in August, it was basically silence.
Oh, boy.
And the undersecretary of the Department of Interior came out and said, well, We're still looking at things. We're going to go to Tier 2A on the drought contingency plan, which is a plan decided upon and among the basin states in 2019, and it's not enough. It's basically a drop in the bucket. So we're still sitting here. All of us are waiting. So what's
the tier is 1A?
We're down to tier 2A now.
2A.
And so Arizona has taken more water than anyone else by far. We took 512,000 acre feet out of our 2.8 million acre foot allocation in 2022 with tier 1. Now we're going to tier 2A in January of 2023. And that will reduce us another 80,000. So we go up to be 592,000 acre feet. However, in 2022, Arizona left over 800,000 acre feet behind Lake Mead. The other 300,000 acre feet was voluntary. And some other states have also put behind Lake Mead what we call intentional created surplus. But right now, no other state has come up and offered anything. Everyone's saying, no, we're not giving up. Everyone's pointing at everybody else. And the Bureau of Reclamation made these big, bold statements in June. We're doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I'd have to say is Mr. Steller is right. Some action is needed. Agriculture is ready to step up, Mr. Steller, and anyone else who's interested in knowing that. And agriculture along the Colorado River has put some real teeth into some action. What will happen and ultimately to address this problem remains to be seen. But he has a good point to start it with. But I would say that there's been some effort made on both the part of the state of Arizona and lower basin agriculture to really much greater than anybody else. No one, everybody else in the basin, all the other states have done nothing.
So Mexico. The dams, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, the dams just keep going down?
Yeah. Every day we're talking, you know, we're using that water at a rate faster than it's coming in. And so the reservoirs are down to 25% or less than 25% capacity. Whoa. So we have to act.
Is there a point, Jeff Silvertooth, of no return on those reservoirs?
Yes, sir.
What would that be?
I forget the exact level on the elevations, but there's a point at which both of those reservoirs will reach what they call dead pool.
Ooh.
There'll be a little water left at the bottom of the reservoir, but not enough to take out and to divert for any other purposes, both with Lake Powell and Lake Mead. We can't let that happen. Plus, that threatens the water supply, which is, you know, for the entire Southwest. Also, too, there's hydroelectric power that's very important that comes out of these dams.
But if nothing were done, that could happen.
That could happen. You know, it could happen. You know, my point is that the basin states, the Bureau, I guess, to their credit, they're giving the states an opportunity to solve the problem, to come up with some solutions. There's not much that's come up so far, really, except for Arizona and a bunch of other states to be saying, we're not giving up. California just announced the other day they're willing to give up 400,000 acre feet if They get billions of dollars from the federal government for salt and sea reclamation, which is another story in itself. Also, the Gila River Indian Reservation, Indian community, they've offered up, they offered a basic 250,000 acre feet this year, 125,000 acre feet of wet water they have right now. Plus, they said, we're willing to sell another 125,000 acre feet into the CAP or back to the state, probably CAP, that would come back to Arizona if you want them. That's groundwater they've been storing. So the Gila River Indian community has been thinking ahead on this. They're seeing this as an opportunity for them to both contribute to the solution to the problem, also favor their own condition best they can.
Then look at Las Vegas and Nevada.
Nevada, Clark County.
They've been quiet.
Yeah, Clark County. I should correct myself to say Clark County, which is the only entity of Nevada that takes Colorado River water.
Right.
They've also stepped up with some pretty aggressive measures. Yes, they have. In fact, they've banned all recreational grass
in Las Vegas,
Clark County.
I did not know that.
They're pretty serious about it.
Huh.
So I would give them credit as well. They just don't have a large allocation. But what they have, they're trying to protect. Now, in New Mexico, the Republic of Mexico, from Sonora and Baja California, they also are giving up a small amount of water this next year, as well as Arizona. But California is a big water user. It's not giving up any. And, Mr. Steller, I would suggest that we look at California, too. They're using almost 30% of the water in the Colorado River. Besides agriculture giving up, there's another big straw in the river, and that's coming from the state of California. So they need to participate too, in my view.
And you hear some of these political ads in Arizona talking about, like, oh, we can do desal, like it's, oh, we can do desalinization. Maybe we'll do that next year.
Well,
we're talking way down the road.
Yeah, it's going to be helpful to us several years from now, but
yeah,
to put that into place was going to take several years and a lot of politics to make that happen. There's good news there, though. The state of California just approved in Southern California, another desal plant, and they'd rejected one last year, I think, in Huntington Beach area, and it was just approved recently for a new plant to go in around in Orange County, I believe. So
and it
that's
makes
a step
so
forward.
Much sense there, mm-hmm. right on the ocean, but here,
right.
Wow, trying to get that happening here.
Right, right. And bringing water from the Missouri or the Mississippi River, I mean, that's years away. So we've got to take some, there's going to have to be some serious actions taken right away on the Colorado River to save the river, save these dams. We just can't let that happen for a lot of reasons, for the benefit of the citizens of throughout the Southwest. 40 million people, 7 states, United States, 2 states in Mexico, 30 Native American tribes, and almost 6 million acres of cropland are being supported by this Colorado River.
You're out and about all over the state talking to those in ag. Is this going to accelerate the migration of people and many times generations of Arizona farmers? Will this accelerate their departure from the industry and sell off that land to real estate?
Right now it's happening in Pinal County as we speak. It's been happening this past year. They lost they being the Central Arizona Irrigation District's Central CAP, lost 512,000 acre feet. From the tier one reductions that all went out of ag. Now tier two reductions cleans out all of their CAP water. So they're trying to convert to groundwater, and there's a lot of farms. It's sad. It's a difficult situation, Bill. I'm witnessing people losing these farms that are multi generational farms. Good farmers, good people. And basically, without water, they can't operate. And it's happening to them.
Are they cotton farmers?
In Central Arizona, they're all cotton farmers.
Yeah.
They farm the crops that are common to Central Arizona, cotton, corn, wheat, alfalfa, et cetera. But, yeah, they're facing the sharp edge of the knife on this deal right now.
You know, years ago, Jeff, we're talking decades ago, there was talk of a megamopolis of a corridor between Phoenix and Tucson joining
right.
up. You can almost see that happening now.
Oh, Lord.
With housing going the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not that area of the tribes of the First
right.
Nation group
right.
up toward Phoenix, but you could see that happening.
Right.
But then you have to ask yourself, where's the water going to come
right.
from to sustain these housing
right, right,
developments.
Right, that's a big question. The balance between our agriculture.
And I've only got a few seconds. I bring up a huge question.
But that's
question.
A good point.
Yeah.
That balance between urban and agriculture
yeah.
is right there. It's an academic discussion, but it's very real for us today.
Why don't we pick it up next month?
Yes, sir.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth. Always a pleasure.
Likewise.
Hope it's a great Halloween for your daughter
Thank
celebrating
you.
Her
Thank
birthday.
You. Thank you.
All right, we'll take
you
a break.
Well.
take a break and be back in 23 hours. How's that? We'll take a break and then we'll hear CBS News and then the Dave Ramsey Show about your money. It's Bill Buckmaster along with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth and John Engineering and Producing saying, we all hope you have a great afternoon.